You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, I couldn't see too much detail about the 246 billion or 264 billion rand, I should say, in savings, apart from the fact that there was a reference to the bulk will come from the wage bill. And there seems to be an awful lot of uncertainty still. Matthew Parks is COSATU's parliamentary coordinator. Matthew, before we dive into that specifically, your overall thoughts on the budget before we talk about wages?
Look, I think for us, we're disappointed on many fronts. All we can see is that government's going to try to balance the budget on the backs of public servants by giving them a four-year wage freeze or an effective wage decrease after inflation. We would have really hoped to see government address the fundamental fiscal and economic crisis facing us. One is that we have a stagnant economy. We need to stimulate it. We need to save businesses from closing, save workers' jobs. That's how you can ensure they can pay their taxes to keep government moving. We would have hoped to see clear interventions around corruption, wasteful expenditure, which consumes about 150 billion rand or 10% of the budget every year. We would have hoped to see a clear roadmap to stabilize the state-owned enterprises, get them back in the seat so they can stop being dependent upon massive bailouts in the state. And also would have hoped to hear clear interventions to capacitate SARS to tackle the billions of rands lost in tax and customs evasions. But we didn't see anything on that front. All we saw was that we're going to dump the bill for looting, estate capture, and mismanagement upon nurses and teachers. And that's the sole solution to everything. And for us, that's it's a huge missed opportunity.
On the SARS issue, there was a mention of 3 billion rand for SARS and recapacitating a unit to go after high net worth and wealthy taxpayers to ensure that the tax gap is closed. So I'm not sure there was nothing with regards to recapacitating SARS. I want to come back to the wage bill, though. And what we did see in the budget documents was the government has been buoyed, Treasury at least, by the Labour Appeals Court judgment that was handed down in December last year, which essentially found that this three-year rolling wage and salary agreement at issue wasn't legally binding because Treasury's permission hadn't been obtained, and that Treasury's responsibility to ensure that South Africa's fiscal and financial well-being really trumped its commitment to honour the wage agreement. I know that is now before the Constitutional Court. What do you make on the way? What is your sentiment around the government's continued bargaining position and the way it's interacting with Labour on this? Because there is a real fear that it's going top down, and we may have an issue when it comes to integrating these things from a bottom up approach.
Well, exactly. I mean, you need to have labour market stability. Workers in any workplace, be it public or private, need to feel motivated and appreciated. A demotivated worker is not going to be a productive worker. Workers have a right to expect inflationary increases to protect themselves and their wages from inflation, to take care of their families. Many public servants are highly indebted. People tend to conflate public servants. I forget that most public servants are nurses earning 20,000 rand a year. They are police officers earning 20,000 rand a year. They are teachers earning not much more than that. They tend to confuse the well-paid bureaucrats managing departments with them. If you impose a four-year wage freeze, which government is doing, you're going to see a flight from the public service of skilled workers. You're going to see doctors and nurses being poached by wealthy countries in the Gulf and the Middle East. You're going to see teachers move into the private sector, and that's going to further weaken the capacity of the state to provide the public services you just mentioned now, which are critical to growing the economy. We think government needs to come and negotiate with unions about a way forward, which is win-win. We don't want to see the state collapsing, because if the state goes to the IMF, the first to pay the price will be public servants and retrenchments and public services being cut. But then we need to find a way to address the issues. We think there are ways. One thing which helps significantly is that inflation has come down by 50%, from 5.5% to 3.2%. That alone gives huge space. But government needs to lead by example. You need to see politicians taking a 25% salary cut. You need to see the reduction in the number of deputy minister, MEC, mayor posts. You need to see one public service wage agreement for the entire state. Well, people often forget that the wage bill that we're talking about here is for the public service departments, which is two-thirds of the state, where there is limits to what management can earn. But in the state-owned enterprises, there's no limit. It's a wild west. So as a consequence, you have in the entities people earning more than the president at management level. Yet these are the very same chaps who have broken those entities. So I think for us, we need to have that engagement, but it needs to be done properly. If government just comes to Parliament and tables a budget and says, 4-year wage freeze, how do you have an engagement around that? It's a fait accompli.
On the issue, just lastly, Matthew, of labour market reforms, and we saw the jobs bloodbath out yesterday, we're all in agreement unemployment is the number one crisis. And South Africa really is in need of labour market reforms to bring more unskilled workers into the economy. And the fact that we see organised labour is so determined to resist reform must imply that you understand that the existing regime creates value for organised labour. The question is, who pays the price here? And surely that's where the rubber has got to hit the road. If we're talking about trade-offs, is, you know, how do we open up the labour market? We've got an environment where national minimum wages are increasing in sectors that are now really at pains to stress agriculture, for example, that they might be shedding more jobs as a result. This doesn't benefit the unemployed at all.
Look, we don't think you're going to build an economy by paying people slave wages. It didn't work under the party era. It's not going to work now. We've yet to be told what part of the labour laws are problematic. So the minimum wage is very low. In fact, for 2 years, there was no increase in the minimum wage amount. And look, if a company generally can't afford it, the law allows them to apply for exemptions.
Matthew, just quickly, we've got a system of wage-setting institutions that has the effect of pushing up wages even in the presence of vast numbers of unemployed workers who, in the absence of these institutions, would have moderated any increase in wages. It's simple supply and demand. I mean, the scarcity of skills drives up the cost of skilled labour, but if you've got a plethora of unskilled labour in a market like this, those are the kinds of things
But we're missing the point, Michael. Yeah. So the farm workers, let's come to that as a topical example. Farmers are struggling because they're being squeezed by the retailers who charge them, who offer them a very low price for their products. We've had to put a minimum wage in effect because farm workers are being paid R5 an hour. You cannot live physically on that amount. But if a company can't afford it, they can apply and they can receive an exemption. The farm workers were actually kept at a lower level of minimum wage for 3 years to give time for agriculture to catch up. But for us, we really want to look, we don't want to have a race to the bottom because that's not going to benefit anybody. If you pay people a pittance, they can't buy the goods we're producing, need them to buy. For us, it's about what are the structural reforms to get the economy moving. So we think, for example, you need to ramp up local procurement. We buy local manufacturing goods because that's going to benefit local factories. We need to sort out our ports and our transit so we can get our goods to our export markets much faster and to end the endless queues at the harbors. We need to fix Eskom so companies have reliable and affordable electricity so they can work. We must fix Metro Rail so workers can get to the companies on time so they can have a full day of productivity. Even other issues, Michael, about removing regulatory blockages like water licensing, which takes mines 3 years to get. Those must be scrapped and reduced to 30 days, you know? I think we want to find what are the win-win things which can benefit everybody as opposed to trying to have a race to the bottom, which, to be honest with you, will benefit nobody.
Matthew Parks, Parliamentary Coordinator of COSATU, with Labour's reaction to the budget.